S.M. Lockridge is a pastor down in San Diego, California. And he had this incredible experience of being able to touch people's lives with the way that he spoke. And he did that one day. He had studied all this stuff, but he did that just kind of from what was in his heart. And the whole theme of our weekend here is, attract me. And one of the things that we want to really understand from God is how much He loves us. And so last night we talked about Joshua chapter 24 and that covenant that God, living in covenant with God. They understood what it was to live in covenant with God, God's people. And they understood who God was. And I wanted to talk to you about David today. And if you could turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel 17. Anyway, no worries. We can work with that. In 1 Samuel 17, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the life of David, and we're going to see how different characteristics were the earmarks of his life or outstanding things about him. There's some simple things about him, and there's some more complicated things about him. Now, we all know the story of David. We know the story of David and Goliath here in 1 Samuel, right? In 1 Samuel 17. And David and is this kid whose dad sends him down, and he is going to bring bread and cheese and all those sorts of things to his brothers, right? And so he goes down into that valley, and he sees Goliath come out, and he comes out and challenges the people of Israel, the army of Israel. And he says, come on, bring it on. And I don't know if he said bring it on, but I'm sure he said something of the sort of that time. But he said, you want a piece of me. And so, he didn't say that. But what he did was he challenged the army of Israel. And so David sees this, and he's indignant. As a young man, he's indignant. And he says, why is this happening? Why is this happening? And so he goes to his brothers and he says to his brothers, hey, look at this guy. He's coming out and making us look like fools. Why are you guys out there fighting him? Come on. This is God's people that he's defying. This is us that he's insulting. And so if we read in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 4 says, a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. He was over 9 feet tall, okay? So the guy could, make 360 slam dunks, no problem, right? He was just an amazing guy. I mean, imagine him in the NBA, Those people bold. He just had to reach up and everyone would be going, oh. I mean, even Shaquille, Shaq, he'd be like, can't defend this guy. Imagine being 9 foot tall. They'd have to make new hoops, I think. let's make them 12 feet instead of 10 feet. Imagine that. Imagine a little kid trying to hit. Imagine me trying to hit a 10-foot hoop. So, you see that. He was 9 feet tall. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod. So, like, this was massive, right? And its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. And Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for the battle? Why do you come out with it? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects or your servants. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become the subjects and serve us." Well, for Goliath, there was no contest. There was no one. I mean, Saul was, the Bible tells us that Saul was one of the tallest men in Israel. He was head and shoulders above everybody else. Maybe he was anywhere between 6 foot and 7 foot. Who knows how tall he was. But he was taller than most of his countrymen. But he wasn't even able to go out there, because this guy was probably a good 3 feet taller than him. So you think about that. You think about that. That's a pretty big guy. That's pretty intimidating. You ever stood beside someone who's 7 foot tall? You ever? I met a guy at a buddy's wedding. The guy's 7 feet. He was just massive, you know. And another friend of mine, he's about this tall, stood beside him. We took a picture. Looked like his son, you know. And even though the little guy was older than him. So when you think about it, you think this guy was huge. Now, as we take a look at what he says here, he defies them. And so David had gone down, and it tells us that he goes down to hand out this food. So he took these 10 cheeses, verse 18 says, to the commander of their unit, "See how your brothers are, and bring back some assurance from them." There with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah, fighting against the Philistines. So early in the morning, David left the flock with a shepherd, loaded up, and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle position, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other, and David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and greeted his brothers. As he was talking with his brothers, with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. When the Israelites saw the man, they all ran from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give him great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his father from taxes in Israel." So, to beat up Goliath, there's some fringe benefits here. Imagine not having to pay taxes. Wouldn't that be great? You didn't have to pay taxes? Huh? That'd be all right. That'd be sweet. Right? No taxes, okay? And imagine if you were a single dude, you know, and the king wanted to give you his daughter in marriage. Boy, you'd be set. No taxes. The king's daughter. And also, a new car. No, he didn't say that. A nice Lexus, and okay. That would be all right if he probably would have given him that, you know, in those days. But he decided that, so David said, "Well, look, this is crazy." So he says, when Eliab, verse 28 says, David's oldest brother heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him, because he says, how could you guys, you know, watch this uncircumcised Philistine, he says, that he should defy the armies of the living God. And so his brother says, "Hey, you're supposed to be down in the desert looking after the sheep." He says, You just think you're better than everybody. Come on down here and act the way you are." He says, Don't do this. But David said to Saul, "Your servant..." So David said to Saul, verse 32, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Your servant will go and fight him." Now, David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his flock." Verse 34 says, "When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it. I struck it and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. So let's set the scene. So here we are with David. Now, he's the sort of guy that, now, he was young. He was probably a teenager. But he'd been out tending the sheep. And all of a sudden, one time, a lion came along. And a bear came along. And so he tells the story of how a lion or a bear grabs the sheep. And he comes over, and he grabs it by his hair, and he pulls it out. I mean, that's gutsy. I mean, would you do that? Huh? Come on. Which one of you would do that? Huh? Hey, bears eat sheep. Hey, look, man, they eat anything. they'll eat you. And if they eat me, they get a big meal. And but this sheep that David was looking after, he was protecting them. So he would grab him by his hair and he'd pull him out. And he says, I did that twice with both a lion and with a bear. So imagine them listening to this. And he's been out in the woods too long, hanging out with sheep, I mean, imagine, your best friends are sheep. You're going to have a little bit strange or something, they think, right? I mean, all he did out there was, he played around with a slingshot, and he did this and he did that, and there's not a whole lot going on out in the middle of the wilderness, And so when a lion and a bear come along, that's your best entertainment. Let's see if we can beat them up. So that's what was happening with David. So he says, well, I'm going to go after this guy Goliath. And so what Saul says, he says, okay, well, we'll give you all the help you can get. So he puts some heavy armor on him. Huh? So he puts on this heavy armor. So he puts on this helmet, and he puts on the heavy armor, right? Probably a big sword. Imagine this teenager, he could barely probably, he was probably quite skinny and not able to pick up a whole lot. But he's probably got all this armor. And imagine David trying to move around, couldn't dance, couldn't move any beat. Like that, right? He just, and then all of a sudden, falls over. Forget it. He's not able to do this. So he says, forget this stuff. And the Bible tells us that he goes, and so it says that he dressed in, he put on a coat of armor and a bronze helmet on his head. And verse 39 says, David fastened on a sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. I cannot go in these, he said to Saul, because I'm not used to them. So he took them off. He took his staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. So he picked up 5 smooth stones, the Bible tells us, okay? So he picked up these smooth stones and he put them in his bag. Now, he went out there, and this Philistine's out there, and his shield bearer is in front of him, and he keeps coming closer over to David. And he looked at David and saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, am I a dog? Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. He says, come here, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. So not only is Goliath 9 feet tall, not only is Goliath, outfitted with the latest in technology, I mean, if it was today, the guy would have like a missile launcher on his back, I mean, that's the sort of thing. Imagine going out to war. I'll just pull out my missile launcher. That the size of a BlackBerry. So you think about it, that all the odds are against David, but David gets out there, and he says, this day the Lord will hand you over to me. I will strike you down and cut off your head. Yeah. Imagine going to some guy 9 feet tall. I'm going to beat you up. I'm taking you down, buddy. And I'm going to slice your head off. That's gutsy. And that's courageous. So what we see here is that all those that were gathered, it says there, verse 46. Judea will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or by spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. So as the Philistine moved closer to attack David, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. And so David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. And David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the scabbard. After he had killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout, and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath, to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Sherem road to Gath and Ekron. And so what happened was as David returned from killing the Philistine, verse 57, it says, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with David, still holding the Philistine's head. Imagine him still holding the guy's head, probably grabbed by the hair. You know, that sort of thing, you know, some guy comes along and says, look, King, I've killed the guy, look at his head. That kind of thing is kind of gruesome and gross and gory, isn't it? But you think about it. You think about what happened in this situation. It was an extraordinary situation. So, first of all, one of the things that we see as God teaches us through the lives of Bible characters. For example, the life of David, the life of Ruth, or the life of Joseph, or the life of different individuals in the Bible. God gives us those biographies that we see, you know? And we see these biographies and we understand them, that they are what God is trying to teach us through His Word. He's trying to teach us by the lives of these people. How does God attract people? He gives you, you know, He doesn't just give you, you know, if He told us about the lives of Michael the archangel, we know a little bit about Gabriel, and we know a little bit about Michael, right? Very, very little bit. He uses real people. He uses very, very real people. People that had situations that happened in their lives. That's how God teaches you and me. And so He says, look at the lives of these people. Yes, they lived a long time ago. Yes, they lived in a very, very different time. But they went through a lot of what you and I did. How about the life of Peter? Anybody here can identify to Peter? Huh? The Apostle Peter? Anybody can identify the Apostle Peter? What is it about Peter that you can identify with? Okay, he denied the Lord Jesus a few times. So what does that mean? How does that relate to you? Bingo. So what it is that, see, we extract stuff from the Bible about people's lives and we can apply it to our lives today. And so that's how God attracts us to Himself, because He's displayed to us and He says, look, there are people that have been through many of the things that you are going through. Peter was one of the closest disciples to Jesus. I mean, Jesus loved Peter. He says, upon this rock I will build my church. In other words, Peter was a foundational member of the modern day church. In the book of Acts, he was one of the first people to give incredible sermons that saw thousands of people come to Jesus Christ. But he was a guy that denied Jesus. Right? So if you have ever kept your mouth shut in a situation when maybe you should have spoken up, remember, Peter did the same thing. Oh no, I don't know him. But your accent tells us that you're from Galilee. Oh no, I don't know Jesus. You know? And then he used some curse words, you know, to just be cool. And to make, hey, that's what he was doing. He was trying to, hey, look, man, I'm cool. You know, I'm from the projects or whatever. I don't know. He was trying to say, hey, look, I'm cool. I can swear just like the rest of you. And I don't know Jesus. And I'm just hanging out here by the fire because this is interesting to see what's going on. That's what he was doing. But the reality is that God's teaching us through people's lives like Peter. David is no different. Now, one thing that we see about David is that he was brave. Now, what's bravery to you? What's bravery to you? Anybody ever seen a brave act? Anybody done ever a brave act? Huh? I once did a brave act. It wasn't the most brave. It was a brave thing I did. It wasn't the smartest thing I ever did. I'll tell you about it. I was in southeastern Turkey. And I had been in southeastern Turkey. I was back in a city called Istanbul. You guys know where Istanbul is? It's one of the larger, older cities of Turkey. And it's a very, very cool old city. And in Istanbul, I was I had to go and buy a bus ticket. So I took my friend Greg with me, who was part of our team. We'd been out giving out Bibles and stuff like that. And in Turkey, it's kind of like they tell you it's okay to preach about the Lord and stuff like that, but in reality, they squash it pretty good. So there's not really the religious freedom that the Constitution says there is. But so we were out there, and we were actually going back towards Greece. And so what we were doing is we had to buy our bus tickets. But I had to do some research first, so we went down and did our research at the bus station. So what happened was we were walking along, and I saw this little old lady, and she was all hunched over, and she was begging. And over in Turkey, you see a lot of the people, especially the women, they're all they're covered quite. Quite extremely. Some of them will even be covered with those black veils and those black dresses, and all you'll see is their eyes. And those are very, very conservative Muslims. And so you see a lot of that. But you also see a lot of women with just a scarf. You can see their face, but they have a scarf. But, you know, it's like 30, 40 degrees Celsius, and they're like in pink outfits, and they're like raincoats, and it must be cooking hot under there. Anyway, so but this dear little lady, she was begging for money, and so she's going along asking. So she goes to this guy. Now this guy was, just a regular Turkish dude. He was wearing his pants, and I remember this mustard shirt that he had on, you know. But he had it kind of open down to here, big hairy chest, you know, had the chains, and he thought he was pretty cool. And so he's like talking to his friend, you know. So he's talking away to his friend, and this lady comes along, and he starts yelling at her. And he gets all mad, and he tells her to go, and he gives her a kick in the rear. It was awful. And I'm just like, you know, I'm watching this, okay? Now, understand, I'm this Canadian dude there. This is not my country. But I got indignant. I was ticked. I was mad. I was really mad. So I went up to the guy. And I started talking to him in English. I said, what are you doing? And I grabbed him. I said, don't do that. You don't ever kick or hit a woman. You don't do that. And I gave him a shove, and I said, don't do that again. He didn't understand a word I was saying. And his buddy's kind of like trying to, you know, and my friend, he's just like, you know, thinking that the knife's going to get pulled out, and, you know, glad to have known you. You know, and so we were, and everyone's kind of stopped looking at this situation. But then I kind of realized, catch you later, you know. And anyway, but what it was is he stopped, you know, and basically I called him out. I said, don't do that. You don't hit a woman. Anyway, so I felt very bad about it. And after we went back to our hotel, and I said to Greg, I said, in a couple of days, I said, I've got to go back. I've got to go back, and I've got to meet that guy. So I'm going to pray that God will give me the opportunity to meet that guy again. Because I need to apologize to him. Not apologize for, you know, not to justify what he did, but to apologize to him because I had kind of crossed the line there. Well, what happened was, sure enough, there he was. Same spot. So I called him over and I said, I'd like to speak with you. Do you have anyone that speaks English? English. So, sure enough, he takes me through these, you know, little alleys and... I'm still alive. I'm still here. So, obviously nothing happened. But, you know, and I'm going, that's going to be all right. So, we go up these stairs into this back room. You know?
Felt like the mafia.
Anyway, and you know, and this guy brings him into this room. All of a sudden, there's like 20 guys, maybe 30 guys, all in this room. We're all crowded in there. And this man across, this other guy's across the desk, and this other guy's here. And he goes, "You speak English?" "Yes." "Oh, okay, yeah." So I said, I just want to tell you something. I said, I need to apologize to this gentleman because I, you know, grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and pushed him around. And he says, and I said, I want to apologize to him for what I did. I said, I still disagree with the fact that he hit a woman and that he should not do that. But I said, I acted in a wrong way. And I said, I am a visitor to your country. And I said, furthermore, I'm a Christian. I'm a believer. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. And I pulled out my New Testament. And I gave it to him as a gift. That sort of courage and boldness only comes from God. Because otherwise, if you do it in your own power, you're a dead man. Right? I mean, I'm not telling you the story so you can think, wow, what a brave guy, you know, and all the girls go, that's so good. It's not for that, you know. My wife did not marry me for my muscles, that's for sure. Okay? When you think about that, you need to understand that when we do some things, sometimes we do it in the power of God. David did this in the power of God. First of all, one thing we can learn from him, he was brave. The second thing that we can learn about David is that he was pure in heart. Let's look at 1 Samuel, first of all, chapter 13. 1 Samuel, chapter 13. 1 Samuel, chapter 13 is Saul, the first king of Israel, has messed up, right? You guys know a little bit about Saul. Do you guys know a little bit about Saul and about the first king of Israel? Say yes or no. Yeah. So Saul has screwed up, right? He basically was supposed to take care of an enemy king and didn't. Didn't take care of him. He was supposed to get rid of all their stuff. It was ruthless, really. But it was necessary because they had to annihilate everyone. Because, you see, what it was is, remember what we read yesterday, how Joshua said, don't serve foreign gods. He kept saying that, right? He kept saying, don't serve foreign gods. He kept saying, you know, don't do stuff like that. He said, don't get involved. Don't get involved with foreign gods. Don't get involved with the wrong things. Don't get involved with the wrong people. That's what he was saying. And so what he was saying is that don't pursue after those things, because they'll influence you for the wrong way. Well, this is what God was saying to Saul. He was saying, you got to get rid of everything. You go after someone, for example, the Philistines, it says they had assembled, and Saul remained at Gilgal, and all the troops with him, and were quaking with fear. He waited 7 days, and he was supposed to get rid of everything what did he say? He says, Saul replied, when I saw that the men were scattering, that you did not come, he says, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not sought the Lord's favor, so I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering. So what it was is that he took care of the burnt offerings himself. He took care of the everything. He did it his way. He didn't wait for God to give him directions. And Samuel was supposed to come. Samuel says, you acted foolishly. You have not kept the command the Lord your God gave you. If you had, he would have established your kingdom over Israel for all time. But now your kingdom will not endure. Now here is this what verse 14 says. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. What do you think a man... Now, remember, this is a generic term, okay? So, girls, you're not excluded from this, okay? That's a very important thing to understand. A man after his own heart. What does that mean to you? What does that mean? Anybody? What is a person after God's own heart? What does that mean? A person that can, you know, walk through walls? What does that mean? Anybody? What are you guys back here? Huh? What do you think that means? Any thought? Pardon me? Seeking God, okay. Person that seeks God. Any else? Any other insight? Any thoughts? Pardon me? Hey, that's a great answer. I thought of that one. That's good. So basically, your goals and God's goals line up together. Okay, that's a great answer. Any other thoughts? A person who prioritizes God. Okay. What do we see about David in that first story we looked at about David and Goliath? We didn't, you know, look at every detail of it, but we looked enough at it that we understood that he said, hey, this guy is coming out and he's making chumps out of my brothers. Did he say that? No. He says, you know, he's making the king look bad. No, he said he's defying God and he's defying God's people. He understood what was at stake. He understood the reasons why. That's what made David very different. You know, have you ever... Who here has a brother or a sister? Okay. I have three older sisters, no brothers. And, but I'm still a he-man, okay? And, So I, my three sisters, but I remember I was in grade 8 in school, and there were these guys, and I was at my locker, and you know, they're just, you know, grade 8s, but I, you know, when you're in grade 8, you take it very personally, right? This one guy pushed the other guy into me on purpose, right? And so I said, hey, I said, what's, you know, and I, you know, I was ready to, you know, drop the gloves. Didn't have any gloves, but I was going to drop them anyway. And so I, you know, and so my sister, oh man, my sister comes in between us and goes, she goes, David, don't fight, you know, it's just not worth it. And I'm just going, you know, I reached over and gave him one. But anyway, you know, that was a little embarrassing, okay? But what it is that my sister was trying to protect me, okay? Well, David really was, I mean, yeah, he was interested in protecting his brothers, but he was more interested in protecting God's honor. So what motivated him to do those things is that God had seen what was in his heart, even before this took place. He says, I have sought out a man, verse 14 says, after his own heart, and appointed him leader of his people, because you have not kept the Lord's command. Because Saul was a guy who was interested in himself. Who here is a selfish person? If you don't put up your hand, I'll kill you. No, I'm just kidding. I yeah, summer camp. That's really good. Preacher kills students. That would not be good. But you know what? Each one of us are selfish. Saul was a very, very selfish person. You know, he thought of himself. He thought of his own stuff. Well, what it is that David, he was different. Okay? At this point in his life, he was very different. He was what was called a man after God's own heart. And he remained that all his life. He did. He had some things, and we're going to talk about that. But he had some things that were really, really wrong in his life. But he was a man after God's own heart. He had a purity of heart. 1 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 7. It's right up there. It says, But the Lord said to Samuel, Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. When David is anointed by Samuel, Samuel has gone in a clandestine way. He's gone out to Bethlehem, where this man Jesse lives. And so he brings out his sons, and he's going to anoint one of his sons. And so God says to Samuel, how can I go? He says, Saul will hear about it and kill me. The Lord says, take a heifer, verse 2 of chapter 16, it says, take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Invite Jesse to the sacrifice and I will show you what to do. You are to anoint for me the one I indicate. So he comes along, and when they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab, okay, one of David's brothers, and he thought, oh man, this has got to be the guy. Surely the Lord's anointed stands there before the Lord. Obviously, he was a pretty big and rugged dude, a lot like myself. And and he said, surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Then Jesse called Abinadab and had him pass in front of Samuel, but Samuel said, the Lord has not chosen this one either. Then all the brothers passed in front. And he says, so he asked Jesse, are these all the sons you have? And he says, they are still the youngest, Jesse answered, but he's tending the sheep. In other words, he's insignificant. Now this is a very important point. Okay? This evening we're actually going to talk about Moses, and tomorrow morning we're going to talk about Enoch. And we think about all these different individuals, okay? And this is what he says. He says, they're still the youngest, but he's tending the sheep. In other words, he has no value. Have you ever met anyone who has been put down so much that they think that they are worth nothing? You ever met anyone like that? Have you ever met anyone that has been put down in life? People have said, you're a worthless dog. I met a boy a little while ago, or some time ago. It's a beautiful story. It's this African boy, and he was living in Africa, in the country of Liberia. And there was a missionary there who has a fairly large family. And there was this thing on the side of the road. Literally, was a thing. It was a thing. It was a boy but he'd been mangled. He had grown, he'd been born with deformities. He didn't speak. He foamed at the mouth. He was dirty. His nails were uncut. He was dirty, and no one looked after him. And he'd been left just to eat scraps and fend for himself. And people would make fun of him. And he'd be just like a thing on the side of the road. Well, this missionary family came along and they decided that they would take him into their home. And he was like a rabid animal, literally. You came close to him, you know, he'd try to bite you and try to hit you. Okay? I mean, it was pretty lousy situation. They nurtured him, and they were able to clean him up and love him, and he became a very different person. And as they got to know him, they taught him how to speak. They taught him how to live, how to take care of himself. And if you see him today, he's been adopted by this missionary family. I saw him here in Canada, and he's this black, beautiful African kid. He still has deformities, and he walks with kind of his arms like this, and he walks with a limp. But I'll tell you, he stands before a microphone, and he tells you his testimony of how God brought him to himself. It's the most amazing story. It makes you cry. How that boy could be taken from the garbage heap of life and be loved. What was it? It was the Spirit of God within a missionary family that said, we will love this person that's unloved by so many. And we will love him back. And we will see him come to know God in a special way. Now that is how God views individuals. Man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. Do you know that there's a lot of people in our world, and maybe there's some of you in this room, and you know, some people, they say, well, I'm not that lovable. You know, a lot of people struggle with their own insecurities. Right? Sometimes, you know, I've met young girls in their teenage years, and I've got to say this about the Asian culture, which I really appreciate, because of your love of family and the ability for family to really nurture itself. I haven't found this as much in the Asian culture as I have found this in other cultures, to be honest with you. But I have met teenagers over the last number of years at different camps that I do. And there are girls, young girls, that I can look at their wrists and they have tried to take their own lives. Or I've seen young people that have tried to, you know, they will starve themselves to death. They will starve themselves because they think they're too fat. Or there are kids that feel so much pressure, maybe to succeed in life with academics, that they feel that they're worthless. Can I tell you something right now? God doesn't look at you that way. God looks at your heart, and He loves you, and He cares about you. He tells us in His Word, man looks at the outward appearance. Man looks at the success. You know, who are the people that we hear most about in our world today? You know, Paris Hilton. For goodness sake, you know, as much as you might love her or hate her, I mean, she's in the news almost every day. That's the standard that the media is setting for you and me. Well, I hope you're not following that. I know a lady, you know, and she follows, I think, almost every style that Paris Hilton comes out with. I just feel sad for her, you know. If you got, you know, all of a sudden you'll see her with a little dog, you know. For goodness, you know. I mean, I don't, I like dogs, but But like you know, just because a Hollywood celebrity or whatever she is, you know, has a dog, doesn't mean I gotta buy a dog. It doesn't mean I have to have, you know, the glasses or the hats or the, you know, or the or whatever that all these people have. But see, that's the standard our world is setting. That's the standard God is not setting for us. But the world is setting a standard saying, if you have the right clothes, if you have the right running shoes, if you have, you know, you have the best watch or this or that or the other thing. You know, there's nothing wrong with fashion items. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about having a nice car or not having a nice car or whatever. You know, all those things are great. But if that's how you see your value, you're sadly mistaken. Man, I drive a Dodge Caravan, you know? 1997 Dodge Caravan. That's not the coolest car on the planet, believe me. There's a billion out there just like it, you know? But see, you got to sometimes look at what's practical. God looks at the heart. Man looks at the outward appearance. God saw the purity of heart in David. And he said, hey, that's the sort of person that you should be. That's the sort of person that you should be. My next point is David was respected. David was respected. Let's go over to 1 Chronicles chapter 11. First Chronicles chapter 11. David had become king over Israel. So he finally had got the kingdom. Now remember, we had just read the story about how David had been anointed the king. Okay? David was anointed. He was still a boy when he was anointed the king over Israel. Okay? Now he didn't fully understand that at that moment. It wasn't until he reached the age of about 32 that he actually became king. Probably a period of about 15 years or more passed before David ever became the king. And so finally he's become the king. Now, David, down in verse 10, we start reading the story about David's mighty men. Now, one of the things that David had to his advantage that he had people that really respected him. Okay? He had people around him that valued him. Now I want to address an issue of friendships here. Friendships. Now, do you have friends that value who you are? Do you have friends that appreciate you as a person? That's very important, you know. Surround yourself with people that are your friends, that are good friends, valuable friends. Now, what sort of friends should we search out in life? What sort of people should we search out in life? Anybody have any thoughts? I mean, do you guys hang out with crackheads? No. You know. Why don't you hang out with crackheads? Why? What? Because they're crackheads, okay? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not putting people down. A lot of the people that are addicted to drugs and alcohol or whatever it is that have substance abuse in their life, there's reasons why. Now, they've made bad choices. They're sinners. So that's a fact. But also, sometimes they have had external influences in their lives. Their parents don't care, or they have been surrounded with it, and it's easy access for them, and all of a sudden they're addicted. So often, an environment will have been created so that they can test out this stuff. But sometimes it isn't. Now, one of the things that I watch out for, I'm sure Jimmy watches out for with his family, is that what sort of friends do my children have? For example, we have three children, and my sons have a variety of friends, and their friends are a variety of kids, right? But we have some friends that one of my sons has that I'm not super keen on. So I try to minimize as much contact. Oh, they go to school together, but to go and hang out at his house too much, I'm not big on it. Because those parents, they let him watch movies and TV shows and play video games that I would never even dream of letting my son watch in a million years, even as an adult. So what it is that we have to have people around us that are people that will love and care for us and be respectful of us. If you have a friend that's always calling you and saying, "Let's get drunk," you know, that's not the kind of friend you want. You know, let's try drugs, or let's. Who cares if it's okay to have that, or tell you that it's okay to have premarital sex? Those are not the kind of friends that you want. The kind of friends that you need and want are people that are going to value you as a person and respect you. David was a man who was respected. 1 Chronicles 11, verse 10 tells us about his mighty men. David's mighty men. Okay? And they were these guys weren't the sort of guys that you want to mess around. They, you know, you push them, they push back. These were the sorts of guys that they put walnuts right here, you know, in the middle of their chest to be able to crack them. Those are the sort of guys they were, right? They were tough as nails. And it says here that, and it tells us all about him. And let's go down to verse 15. And three of the 30 chiefs came down to David to the rock at the cave of Adullam, while a band of Philistines was encamped in the valley of Rephaim. At that time, David was in the stronghold, and the Philistine garrison was at Bethlehem. David longed for water and said, "Oh, that someone would get me a drink of water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem." Okay, so, now, David was the sort of guy that he loved where he had lived, okay? You ever have a favorite place that you have lived? Like, my parents, I grew up in Chile, in South America. My parents are Canadian, but they went as missionaries to South America. And so I live in this great place called San Felipe. Now, to you, it might be just a village in the middle of a foreign country to you. But to me, that's home. That's a place that I love. I go to our house there, because that's the house I grew up in. And I walk around that house every time, and I love and have memories. And it's a great place. I love that house where my parents still live. David had a place that was very, very special to him. And he says, "Oh, that I long for the water that was from that particular well at Bethlehem." And so what happens was that the problem was that it was behind enemy lines at that time. You know how enemy lines sometimes move and they take over a city and then you take it back and then, you know, it goes like that. That's how war is. And so then they're in the war with the Philistines, and they have taken control of this well. Now you got to understand that something like a well was very important to take a hold of, because that was a source of water, and for your troops you need water. And so he says, "Oh, I long for that water. It tastes so good, it tastes so sweet, and I love that." So what David says, he just says it out. "Oh man, I'm so thirsty. You know, this water is garbage, you know, but I wish there was water from that well." So what he says here, he says, verse 18 says, "The three broke through the Philistine lines and drew water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem and carried it back to David. But it says there, he refused to drink it. Instead, he poured it out before the Lord." David was so respected by his mighty men that they were willing to risk their lives to get him a cup of water. Are your friends respectful of you that they would knock themselves out to be a blessing to you? Do you respect and love your friends so much that you would be willing to do things? Now, I'm not asking you, you know, would you be willing to risk your life? You know, there's some things that are crazy and some things that are crazy. These guys did something that was pretty outstanding. They broke through enemy lines just for water. But you see, the symbolism is there. David was so well respected by these guys that they were willing to break through enemy lines to get some water for him. And David did the most amazing thing, right? He took that water, and he poured it out. Just like that. It'll dry. He took that water, and he just poured it out. And they said, what, you know, like, he said, you drink it, man. We sacrificed our lives. But he said, how can I do that? How can I do that with these guys? He had such a purity of heart. So what we've learned about him is that he was courageous. But he realized that he was courageous in God's power. He was brave in God's power. He was pure in heart. You know what? There was a time in his life when this guy, Saul, you know, when he was chasing him all around the countryside? And there was one time that he went into this cave called the Cave of Adullam. And it was this big, huge cave. Have you ever been to one of those big, huge caves? Anybody ever been in a huge cave? In Italy, I just happened to visit a place called La Grotta di Castellano. And this is the most amazing. It's this small little city, this little town in Italy, and one of the villagers happened to find this hole, and he kind of looked down and he thought that, and then he realized that it was a whole cave, way down in a whole cave, and it's a massive cave. It's got all these structures in there, and it's cold, right? So it's all. Dolomite, yeah, whatever. Anyway, it's cool, and everything's kind of frozen, and it's very, very cool. And so the Cave of Adullam was most likely this place that was very, very, you know, deep and intense, and you could probably hide in different spots. David one day was in the back of the cave hiding from Saul. Saul was going by the cave, and in those days they didn't have, you know, public restrooms as we have them today, right? So what happened was Saul, with all his you know, with his cape and on all those things, he goes in and he has to use the bathroom in there. Now, when you're using the bathroom, you're in a very vulnerable position, right? You know? So I'm not going to have to explain anything more about that. But you know, that's what he was doing. And David's men are saying, hey, you can take him out right now. This is your mortal enemy. God has told you that you're going to be king. Man, look at the guy. Just go to the bathroom. You could just annihilate him. You could, you know, this guy's toast. And David said, he said, I will not touch God's anointed. That is a man that God had chosen. David was not going to do that. That's why David was so respected. He knew what lines to cross and what not to cross. These guys would risk life and limb for him because they respected him so much. Guys, listen to me, all of you. Grow up to be people that people will say, I respect that person. I will follow them. I will allow them to lead me. I want my children. And this is the best way that you can be respected, is when your children respect you. You have a leadership in your own home, and you can say, I will be a father, I will be a mother, that my children will say, I totally love and respect my parents so much that I will, even though it may not understand what they're trying to express to me right now in life, I will try to respect them and love them and honor them as much as I can. David had that kind of respect. The challenge is for you and for me tip, you have that kind of respect as well. But one thing about David is that he admitted his mistakes. Not only was he brave, not only was he pure at heart, not only was he respected, but he admitted his mistakes. Do we know what this story is all about? Back in Second Samuel, David becomes content. 2 Samuel chapter 11. David has done a ton of things. He's done some great things. He's been kind even to Saul's family, his mortal enemy. He's done so many things that show kindness. In 2 Samuel chapter 11, it starts out verse 1. It says, "In the spring, at the time when kings go off to war." I always find that really funny. "Oh, it's springtime. I must go off to war." Yeah. You know? Imagine that, eh? Leave the women and children at home. We're going off to war. So, next spring, I'll be calling all of you. We're going off to war. I'm not sure who we're going to fight, but we'll fight someone. I'm just kidding. "David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem." Now, if you are the leader, and see, sometimes he's gained respect. Everyone knows what David's all about. He's consolidated his kingdom. All his ducks are all in a row. And David's there in Jerusalem, and it says that he remained in Jerusalem. When all the other kings were off fighting wars, David remained in Jerusalem. He got complacent with life. You always have to look for new challenges. You know, there's a lot of people that live their lives for retirement. You know? How about those commercials? Freedom 55, right? You ever seen those? Freedom 55. I knew of a guy this summer, he died at 54. Freedom 55 was a different thing for him. That's a reality, guys. That's a reality. Always look for challenges in your life. Always look for things to do. This guy had nothing to do with God, this man that passed away. He had nothing, he had no interest in God. A friend of mine, he was an investment advisor. And my friend had a lot of investments with him. And this man lived for his, he was a good man, he was a family man, he had all things, but he had no interest in the things of God. And he lived his life thinking that his life, he would have it on easy street once he retired. But he had nothing to show for it from a spiritual point of view. In 10 years, he'll be a forgotten man. Maybe not by his family, but by a lot of people. You see, David should have been meeting the next challenge, figuring out what God wanted him to do. But instead, what's he doing? There he is, back at home. And so what happens is that he goes out on his terrace, and a lot of those buildings in the Middle East, and even today, even in where I was in Italy, flat roofs. And you go out there, and you look over the flat roofs. Okay? And you can see the neighbors very easily. The houses are close together. And so you can hear all the neighbors fighting, especially in Italy, you know, and so you can see what's going on. Oh, that's what happened for supper. You know? And so you can see what's even going on. It's kind of lousy as far as I'm concerned. But David looked over and he saw this woman and she was bathing, okay, on her roof. So he looked at her, and she was absolutely stunning. She was gorgeous. So the way that things worked in those days, unfortunately, is that the king said, "Hey, call her over to my place, and we'll see what happens. And sure enough, she came over and she slept with him. And she couldn't say no because that this was the king. But basically, he violated her. And he slept with her. What ended up was that she sent him news and said, I am pregnant from that encounter I had with you. So, all of a sudden, things are a bit different. So, he finds out that her husband, his name is Uriah, he's off fighting a war. He's at the war, he's at the front. So he calls for Uriah to come back. And he says to Uriah, he says, and he brings him over to his house. And so he sits down, has a little party with him. You know, plies him with a little bit of wine. Says, drink up your wine and have some great food and go down, spend the night with your wife. Everything will work out. Then he'll think, oh, I got her pregnant. The guy was so committed. He respected David so much, right? He respected his army so much. He respected his fellow, you know, they had set up this culture of loyalty and respect for one another. He said, I cannot do that. Well, my buddies, they can't go home to their wives the way I can. I mean, it's kind of an odd way to think, but that's the way they thought. He said, forget it. I'll sleep in the doorway of the king. I will not go down to my wife. I'll sleep here at the palace. Sure enough, he slept there at the palace. David gets informed. He sleeps at the palace and goes, oh, brother. All my conniving. I can't get this right. He invites him again the next day. He says, come on. And gives him another meal. I mean, the guy's eaten two meals in a row at the king's table. Eating good food. Plies him with some a little more wine. Says, go down, sleep with your wife. He doesn't do it. He comes back. And so David finally says, I got to get rid of this guy. So what he does, he writes a letter. Basically his death sentence, right? And sends it to the general at the front, General Joab. And he says, please take care of him. And he says, put him right at the front. You know, even the general, who's not a very nice guy, Joab, this guy, he'll kill anybody at the drop of a hat. He says, this is, well, as the king said, so I respect the king. This is his word. So he sticks him at the front. And, you know, odds are pretty good that you're going to die. And sure enough, Uriah died. Bathsheba mourned for him, and then David took her in to be his wife. Okay. Now, what he's done is he's covered up his sin, right? Covered up his sin completely. Brings her in, and then they have a child. But the child is going to die. And David mourns for this child and pleads before God and so, you know, that this child won't die. And then the child dies and David continues on. Now, this is what happened. Is there was this guy named Nathan, and he was a prophet. And he comes up to David and he says, I want to tell you a story. I'll tell you a story about a sheep. A guy who had one sheep. Really nice little sheep. Little Baha, you know? And had a beautiful little sheep, and he says, here's the story. There was this guy who was very poor, but he had one little sheep. And then there was this really, really wealthy guy, and he had tons of sheep. And he comes along and he says, by the way, he says, this guy that had a lot of sheep had some visitors come along. And he looked over his sheep and thought, I just don't want to get rid of my sheep. So he says, this guy has a nice little sheep. I'll take his. One little sheep. And he takes the guy's sheep. And he says, this is awful. That's unjust. We got to deal with a guy like that. Nathan says to him, you're that guy. You're the one, just like that, that took someone else's goods, even though you had, you know, you had your own wife, you had probably a few wives, the way they had wives in those days. And he says, you had all that at your disposal, and look what you did. Well, David is saying, I am that man. And if we go look over at Psalm chapter 51, it tells us what is in David's heart. In Psalm chapter 51, it says there, David tells how he feels after he has sinned. He says, "Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion. Blot out my transgressions. Wash away all my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. Against you only, you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are proved right when you speak and justified when you judge. Surely I have been a sinner from birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. Surely you desire truth in the inner parts, you teach me wisdom in the inmost place." And then he prays this prayer, and he says, and he asks God's forgiveness. He says in verse 10, he says, "Create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Do not cast me from your presence or take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation and grant me a willing spirit to sustain me." And he says, "Then I will learn something from this. I will teach others, transgressors, your ways, and sinners will turn back to you." Now, think about it. Think about what David did here. What did he do? He admitted his sin. He admitted his mistakes. Who here finds it hard to sometimes admit their own mistakes? Oh, isn't that the hardest thing? You know what? What the key problem there is pride, right? It's pride. Pride keeps you from admitting your mistake. We don't want to lose face in front of other people, right? I think that's a huge problem in our world today. And people will cover up their sin, and have you ever tested this? You tell one lie, right? You got to tell another 5 lies to cover up that one lie. David started covering up, brought Uriah all the way, okay, got him drunk, tried to send him down to his wife, didn't happen, brought him, you know, so finally he says, I gotta deal with it. He makes another man do his dirty work for him, the general, sends him to the front line where the battle is the fiercest, and basically makes someone else do all his dirty work while he's sitting at home, not doing what God would want him to do, not leading his people. But here's the great part of David. God knew that David had a pure heart. God knew that David was a man after his own heart. God knew that he was a brave man. And you know what? A brave person admits when they are wrong. Be humble. Be able to admit your sin. That's how you came to Christ, isn't it? Saying, "I am a sinner before God, and I believe that Jesus died for me." That's what the Bible teaches. The final point is the fact that David is remembered. David's remembered. If you go to Jerusalem today, or you go to parts of Israel, you will find hotels that are the King David Hotel, right? You will go to, or you could look at the Israeli flag. What is the symbol on the Israeli flag? Star of David. He's remembered. Now, doesn't the life of David make you attracted towards God? Doesn't the life of David show you that there is something special about the way that a relationship with God is developed? When God teaches someone, when God uses someone, when God rebukes and corrects someone, you see a man after God's own heart. That's what the desire of my heart for you is, that you'll be men and women after God's own heart. Remember that video that we saw at the beginning? The guy said, S.M. Lockridge, he said, "My king is the king of the Jews. He's the king of Israel. He's the king of righteousness. My king is a sovereign. I wonder, do you know him? Do you really know God personally? Are you desiring to get to know him? Are you attracted to who he is, to his character? What you see in David is a type of what we call a type of Christ. He's what Jesus is like. There's a kindness and a compassion and a love that Jesus had for people. David had the same thing. He showed kindness to a guy named Mephibosheth who had no right to have any kindness shown to him. But David showed kindness to him. He could have killed Saul, but he didn't. He did steal another man's wife, and he had to deal with that. He lost a child to it. He lost integrity. And we know, even now, that great mistake that he did. But the great part about it, Psalm 51 shows us how he repented and how he said, I am sorry for my sin. As we go to a time of meditation, I want you guys to take a look at Psalm 86. Psalm 86. And this is a prayer of David. And as you meditate upon what we talked about this morning, before you go to your discussion groups, okay? I want you to look at this and think about what this is all about what God desires for your life. And it says there, hear, O Lord, and answer me, for I am poor and needy. That's all I'm going to read for now. And then I want you to read the rest of it and see where you fit in to this particular passage. Tonight we'll come back with, I think tonight is the next sermon, right? And we're going to talk about Moses, and then tomorrow morning we're going to talk about Enoch and about the purposes that God has for our lives, okay? So why don't we just pray and ask God to bless His Word. Lord, be with us now as we meditate upon Your Word, and as we take these few moments now as we meditate, that as we read Psalm 86, that it would speak to our hearts. May You really, truly know who we are. May we be totally and completely dedicated to You. And Lord, we thank You that You attract us with the lives of these people who were just human beings who made mistakes, yet loved You with all their hearts. Help us to be those people that are willing to admit when we make mistakes, admit our sin, admit our guilt, and be courageous, to be pure in heart, to choose what is right, to choose what is good. And so we ask these things in Jesus' mighty name.